Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Bijana Malabha Jaya Giri Varurahure Jaya Giri Varurahure Gopi Jana Malabha Jaya Giri Varurahure Jaya Giri Varurahure Yashoda Nandana Jaya Raja Jwana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Jaya Raja Jwana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Bijana Malabha Jaya Giri
Abhaya Charanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Vilas Thakur Ki Jai Param Seikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Gajaya Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Gopadath Shyam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagadadasami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shrimati Lalasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaura Premananda Hari 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 Gaura All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Budhle Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vishani Nibhasesha Sunyavadi Pashyat Dejitarni Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So today we're going to attempt to do a little summary about the events that occurred before the Battle of Kurukshetra. So there's going to be a lot of information, so hold on, or fasten your seatbelts, or hold on to your seats, or whatever you're going to do. And if you want, you can take notes, but this is like a summary of most of the important events in the Mahabharata before. And actually, also, whoops, let me turn off the phone. People do have this nasty habit of calling me during class without being aware that they're offenders. Okay, so we are going to go through this summary of events even that occurred before the Mahabharata. Oh my God. So, we're going to start with the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is just me talking. Hopefully this will be entertaining enough for all of you. So the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you have Lord Vamanadev taking everything away from Bali Maharaj and the demons getting defeated, etc., etc., etc. And demons got really upset with this whole thing. They decided they needed some place to come to. So they decided that the Earth planet was a good place for them to take shelter. And so they took birth as kings on the Earth planet. Kings and Kshatriyas, other Kshatriyas and the royal families and everything like that. Kali Yuga, it's described that many times the demons have taken birth in Brahmin families. So, but in the previous Yuga, in the Dwapara Yuga, the demons took birth in Kshatriya families. So that's why it was necessary for the demigods and the devotees and Krishna to come down to the Earth planet to wipe them out. And that's the necessity of this Mahabharata war. It's an interplanetary war. So here is some of the events that are described in the Mahabharata leading up to this interplanetary war in the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita. Once upon a time, many, many years ago, there was this great king. His name was Mahabish. And Mahabish was in the same line as Ikshvaku. And he went to heaven. And he made a big mistake. He looked at Ganga Devi inappropriately. And so he was cursed to come down to the Earth planet. Ganga Devi was also in love with him. So she wanted to come down to the Earth planet. And so at the same time, there were these 8 Vasus, these heavenly very powerful personalities, very intelligent personalities, who had stolen Vasishtha Muni's desire cow. And because of that, and I'm not going to get into the reason why they stole the desire cow, but Kamadhenu, because of that, they were cursed to take birth on the Earth planet, and they begged for forgiveness from Vasishtha Muni, and Vasishtha Muni said, all right, you will not have to have long lives except for the one who was primarily responsible, and that was Jao amongst the Vasus. And that Jao later on became Bhishma, grandfather Bhishma, but not grandfather before he was born and not even grandfather when he was born. Okay, so Ganga Devi comes down to the Earth planet, marries this Mahabish, who at this particular point is named Shantanu. And the way they get married is quite interesting. He agrees, as soon as he sees her, to get married. And he agrees that he will never disagree with her. And if he ever disagrees with her, she's going to leave. So what she does is she starts killing all of her kids. Remember, these are the 8 Vasus, and 7 of whom are supposed to have very short lives because they gave all their bad activities to one Jao, who would later on become Bhishma. So anyway, so they're all very, very interesting. So they're all killed one after the other by Ganga Devi, and Shantanu, being, let's say, in love, doesn't say anything, and also he had that prenuptial agreement not to disagree with his wife. So he just doesn't say anything until it gets time to the 8th kid. It's going to get ready to get killed, thrown into the Ganges, as the other ones were. And he says, stop. And she says, okay, I'm going to stop, but that's it. You will not see me again. Hasta la vista, Shantanu. So she goes away. She also takes this eighth kid with her, who later on becomes Bhishma. Okay, fast forward. So Bhishma, when he grows up, is returned to his father, Shantanu, and Shantanu wants to make him the next king. That's obviously the point, because the primogeniture means that the oldest son, and he's the only son at that particular juncture, becomes the next king. In the meantime, while he's going to be the next king, he's the prince, Yuvaraj, I think it's called, at least in Hindi. He's going to be the next king. His father, Shantanu, who was Mahavish before, falls in love with Satyavati, who is a fisherman's daughter, but actually she's not a fisherman's daughter, but there's a whole story of how she was born from a fish, so she smelled really bad, until she had a relationship previous to her marriage with Vyasadev, Parashara Muni, and gave birth to Vyasadev, and then she got good smell. She was called Ganda Yojana, good smelling girl. So, anyway, so, therefore, Shantanu wants to marry her, he falls in love with her, but there's a condition that if they get married, her son has to become the next king. But Bhishma is already set to become the next king. And so Shantanu goes into a funk and he becomes completely depressed, doesn't understand what to do, and there's no psychiatrist to take care of him at this particular juncture. So Bhishma sees his father in this depressed state and he wonders what's happening, asks the king's assistance. Finally, he understands what's happening. He goes to the fisherman, and he says to the fisherman, my father wants to marry your daughter. The fisherman says, no way, because her son has to become the next king. And Bhishma says, okay, no problem. I'll vow not to become the next king. And then the fisherman says, well, there's another problem, too, because your son may actually fight with him and want to become the next king, too. So Bhishma says, that's no problem. I am going to remain brahmachari my whole life, and therefore it's called Devavrataha, the vow of brahmachari life. Okay, so therefore Shantanu is happy as a lark. He has Bhishma, and he blesses Bhishma too. Actually, how does he bless Bhishma? Because you were able to arrange this nice marriage with the girl of my dreams, therefore you will have the blessing not to die unless you want to die. It's pretty good. Of course, it didn't turn out to be a real blessing at the end. Okay, so, therefore, Satyavati, who gets married to Shantanu at this point, has two kids, Chitrangada and Vichitravirya, by Shantanu. Got it? So, Chitrangada gets killed because he gets fight with a Gandharva of the same age, same name. And Vichitravirya, he's kind of weak. He can't get his own wife, because in those days, if you wanted to get a wife, you had to go out and conquer some enemies and capture the girl or kidnap the girl. Pretty romantic stuff. So instead, Bhishma, his half-brother, decides to get the girls for him. So Bhishma goes out and he kidnaps three girls, the daughters of the king of Kashi, Amba, Ambalika, and Ambika. That's interesting. Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika in that particular order. And so he brings them back to marry Vichitravirya. And Vichitravirya is just really happy, but there's a problem because Amba has already been promised, and she's fallen in love with someone else, who is Shalva. And so Bhishma sends her back. Shalva doesn't want to accept her back. And then she comes back, wants to marry Bhishma. Bhishma says, no, I'm not going to get married to anyone, especially someone who hates my guts like you. And she vows, after being unsuccessful in trying to convince Bhishma to marry her, even trying to use Bhishma's spiritual master, Parashuram, to convince her, or to convince Bhishma to marry her, that she vows to take birth again after performing austerities and be the cause of death of Bhishma. So that's Amba. Remember, let's put her aside for a second. Of course, later on she takes birth as a person named Shikhandi, who is the daughter or son of Drupada. And that's an interesting story which we'll tell in a few seconds. Okay, so Vichitravirya, who is Shantanu's son and Satyavati's son, gets married to these two girls, Ambika and Ambalika. And he is madly in love, but he's also a very weak character. So he's so madly in love that he doesn't take care of himself very well, and he's just engaged in, I wouldn't say licentious activities, but, you know, sensual activities. And he dies, like from cholera or something like that. So he dies, and so there's nobody who's going to be able to be the next king. Because remember, Bhishma has taken the vow not to become the king. So there's nobody. So Satyavati, she goes to Bhishma and says, Bhishma, you should basically marry or have a relationship with the two wives of your half-brother, Vichitravirya. Vichitravirya is dead. Bhishma says, no way. Then Satyavati remembers that in her past, she gave birth to Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva told her that whenever you want, I would, let's see, someone's sending a message here. Chat. Don't send a chat unless there's a problem, because then it just causes. Yeah, she became Ganda Yojana when she smelled good. So don't, please don't send a chat unless there's a message, there's a problem with the internet, because it's just going to really just stop this whole progression of stories that I'm telling. So only send a chat, please, if that's the case. Not that you're happy or sad or you want to be Satyavati in your next life. So anyway, getting back to the point. So I got to go all the way back. Okay, so Bhishma refuses. So Satyavati says, okay, I'll call my son that I had before my marriage with Parashara Muni, which is Vyasadeva. She calls Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva says, okay, but give me a year to make myself look a little bit better, because he's been meditating in the forest. And she says, no, right now. So that's a problem, because Vyasadeva approaches these two ladies, Ambika and Ambalika. And first he approaches Ambika, and Ambika is so horrified to see him before she has a relationship with him that she closes her eyes. So her son is born blind, that's Dhritarashtra. And then Ambalika knows you don't close your eyes, but she's so frightened to see this sage that she turns white, and therefore Pandu is born. And Pandu was actually not of such good health because his mother turned white. And then Satyavati thinks, you know, we need another kid because, you know, here we have a blind person not such in good health. So let's have another little kid, another boy, another son, another prince. So she tells Ambika, you should, again, have a relationship with Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva agrees with that, but Ambika's not into it, so she substitutes her maidservant instead. And so Vyasadeva has a relationship with the maidservant, and as a result, Vidura is born. Oh my God, a lot of things in this story. So Vidura is born, and Vidura is actually an incarnation of Yamaraj, who was cursed to take birth in a Shudra family because he made a little mistake of hurting this Mandavya Muni, and I'm not going to tell a story about that. That's a side story. Okay, so here's the three kids, Pandu, Dhritarashtra, and Vidura. Vidura can't become the king, can't become the prince, because, you know, he's half-blood. So, but he can become prime minister and advisor to the king. So Vidura is there on the side. He's the most educated person. So there's Pandu, who is the younger son, and Dhritarashtra, who is the older son, who is blind. Okay. So what happens is that Pandu ends up marrying Kunti, And he marries Kunti because he's so handsome, he didn't have to fight for her. And she's the daughter of Surasena. And Vasudeva is the son. And so anyway, so she is actually like the sister of Krishna, anyway. So that's why Krishna and Arjuna are cousins. So, and then also Dhritarashtra marries Gandhari. And because Dhritarashtra is blind, Gandhari, being very, very chaste, decides to voluntarily blind herself by putting a blindfold on for the rest of her life. So you got Dhritarashtra married Gandhari, and then Pandu gets a second wife, who's called Madri, and she's the daughter of Salya. So anyway, so they're married. Okay, happily married now, blind Dhritarashtra married to Gandhari, Pandu married to his two wives. And so Gandhari becomes pregnant. Okay, she's actually had the benediction before to have hundreds from Lord Shiva, to have 100 sons. Wow. And then so what happens is that she's gotten the benediction to have 100 sons. But in the meantime, Pandu is out in the forest with his wives, and Pandu has a hunting accident, kills a sage by accident, a sage and his wife, the Rishi Kindaman, his wife. And because of that, Pandu's cursed not to have any sort of intimate relationship with his wife, so he can't have any sons with his wives. So it's a real big problem. Okay, so Pandu's in the forest. He decided to renounce the kingdom, turn it over to his blind brother, Dhritarashtra, and Gandhari and Dhritarashtra are more or less running things, running the show. Gandhari's pregnant. Pretty good. And Kunti can't really have children by Pandu. Madri can't have children by Pandu right now either. Or right now or anytime in the future. And Gandhari's pregnant. She's thinking, well, I'm going to give birth to at least the next king. And then also, you know, I'm going to have 100 sons. This is pretty cool. Meantime, while Gandhari is pregnant and expecting to have a child, Kunti has an instant child. How does she have an instant child? But because before her marriage, she had pleased Durvasa Muni, and Durvasa Muni gave her a seduction mantra by which she could call any demigod and have a child by the demigod. And previously she had had one child. She didn't tell anyone about it. And that was Karna, who was the son of the sun god. And Karna was actually sent away, and Karna was adopted by some Shudra couple as a charioteer, etc. And his mother's name was Radha, but not the Radha from Vrindavan. So he was called Radheya, Karna, which means ear. So anyway, so Kunti isn't able to have a child because she reveals to her husband, not that she had a child before the marriage, but she has this mantra. And Pandu says, okay, use the mantra and call Yamaraj because he's in charge of Dharma. Okay, so Kunti calls Yamaraj. Yamaraj comes and says, here's a kid, and that's Yudhisthira. When Gandhari hears that Kunti has had an instant kid, she gets really upset because, you know, she hasn't given birth yet. And it's over 9 months. And it's probably like 2 years at this particular point. So she punches her stomach. I thought I was going to be first. And she gives birth to a lump of flesh. So she's thinking, oh my God, lump of flesh, what good is that? But Vyasadeva comes into the scene. He produces a lot of, about 101 incubators and divides up this lump of flesh into 101 pieces because the 101th piece is actually a daughter because Gandhari actually wanted a daughter too, and puts them in incubators. And eventually they start to hatch or come out of the incubators. You know, just like sometimes there's preemies or premature children that are put into incubators. And so, anyway, so, sorry about this. So, the first one to hatch, Duryodhana, and he comes out, the jackals are howling, he howls like a jackal, all the bad astrological signs are there. Vidura says, not a good idea to keep this kid, you know, at least give him away or do something with him because he's going to cause the destruction of the entire dynasty. But Dhritarashtra is too attached to his kid. So he says, no, we'll keep him. All right. And this Duryodhana, the first kid, is actually in personality of Kali Yuga. Okay. So pretty heavy. So in the meantime, in the forest, you have Pandu and Kunti and Madri, his two wives. They decide to have a second kid. That is, Kunti is going to have a second kid by another demigod. And that demigod is Vayu, and the second kid is Bhimsen, who is the son of Vayu. And he's so strong that when Kunti drops him, he breaks the rocks. She drops him accidentally off a cliff, and he breaks all the rocks, and he doesn't get hurt. So he's as strong as millions of elephants. All right. And then she has a third kid by Indra, and that kid is Arjuna. And then Madri, the other wife, thinks, you know, come on. What about me? I got to have some kids too. So Kunti says, okay, you can borrow my mantra. And she is very tricky. She has two kids by the Ashwini Kumaras, Nakula and Sahadev. So there's five Pandavas there. Okay. Meantime, there's five Pandavas growing up with their father and mothers, and they're happy as larks in the forest. Now, there's no palace intrigue at this particular point. And then, at the same time, in the palace, there's the 100 kids who are the sons of Dhritarashtra. Okay. Meantime, Madri, just like somehow or other, attracts Pandu, because he's been cursed to die as soon as he tries to have a sexual relationship with his wife. So Madri is bathing, and she has like a sheer dress on. It's very attractive to Pandu. Pandu goes to embrace her and have a relationship with her, and Pandu kicks the bucket. He dies. So everyone is very bereft. So it's decided that Kunti... All right, so before Kunti... it's decided that Madri will leave this world with her husband, Pandu. So she jumps into the funeral pyre, being a very chaste wife. That wasn't forced. She decided to do it. And also she decided to do it because she couldn't be equal to all the five children. She would think her children are more important than the sons of Kunti. And Kunti was equal to everyone. She was completely saintly personality. So Kunti is there with the five kids. So they decide to go back to Hastinapur, which is where Dhritarashtra and Gandhari and their 100 boys and one daughter, Dushala, is. Okay. So they go back. Oh my God. Long story. So anyway. So they go back to Hastinapur, and there is so much envy there between, of course, the Pandavas. They're not envious. The sons of Pandu, they're not envious. But the Kurus, they're really envious. I mean, they're born with like great amount of envy. And as I said before, Duryodhana is like Kali, the personification of Kali Yuga. And there's several attempts on at least Bhimsen's life. And what happened is that one attempt is quite interesting, is that Duryodhana, the head son of Dhritarashtra, decides to poison Bhimsen. And how does he poison Bhimsen? He gives him some food, because Bhimsen is also known as Vrikardara. He has a wolf belly. He can eat anything, and he's never satisfied. And so he gives him some poison food. He throws Bhimsen's body into the river, the Yamuna River. Bhimsen sinks down. He's bitten by these snakes. The snakes counteract the poison. And the snakes, he goes down into the snake kingdom. They actually take him to some sort of snake kingdom. And he gets this rasa kunda, which actually gives him the power even of more elephants. And he becomes even stronger after that. And so then all these different things happen. In the meantime, it's determined that the Pandavas and the Kurus, that is the sons of Dhritarashtra and the sons of Pandu, need to be educated. So they accept the martial arts guru Dronacharya. I'm not going to describe how Dronacharya saw them, but Dronacharya is called Dronacharya because he was born out of a pot after his father, Bharadraj, saw a beautiful girl, an apsara. And Dronacharya really is looking for wealth because he wasn't properly able to take care of his kid, Ashvatthama. So he wants a position, so he takes employment as the guru of the Pandavas and the Kurus. Pandavas means the sons of Pandu. Kurus means the sons of Dhritarashtra. Okay, got that. Okay, so he trains them up nicely in martial arts. And as Guru Dakshin, he asked them to basically attack the kingdom of his friend Drupada, because Drupada has previously insulted him, because Drupada was a king and Drona was a Brahmin. Drupada had insulted him by not properly receiving him, so he takes away Drupada's, half of Drupada's kingdom, not by utilizing the Kurus to do that, but the Pandavas were able to capture Drupada. All right, so Drupada is defeated. So he's a very important person in the story. So Drupada is defeated, and he has so much anger because he's been defeated by his previous friend, Dronacharya. So he's so angry that he decides to have a fire sacrifice to produce a son who can kill who can kill Dronacharya. So he does this fire sacrifice, to make a long story short, and Dhrishtadyumna, who is meant to kill Dronacharya, pops out of the fire sacrifice, and then as a surprise, Draupadi pops out of the fire sacrifice too. So they're both born out of fire. So remember these two, Dhrishtadyumna and Draupadi, both born out of fire. Dhrishtadyumna is meant to kill Dronacharya, the guru, the martial arts guru of the Pandavas and the Kurus. And Draupadi, it's predicted, is going to be the cause of destruction of the whole dynasty too. She's not going to kill anyone personally, but she's going to be the cause of destruction of the whole dynasty. Phew. All right. Meantime, the Kurus, that is the sons of Dhritarashtra, are planning how to destroy or get rid of the Pandavas, the sons of Pandu, the five sons of Pandu. So they tell the five sons of Pandu, we'd like you to go on vacation, and they sent the five sons of Pandu to this place called Varnavata, and they've constructed this flammable house or castle for them. And the five sons of Pandus go into this flammable house, not knowing it's flammable. But Vidura, their uncle, knows that it's flammable, so he sends someone to dig a hole so they have an escape tunnel out of the house. So later on, the house is set on fire, or they set the house on fire, and they escape, and they go into hiding for some particular time, because they don't want to go back to Hastinapur and deal with these horrible cousin brothers that they have. So during the time that they're in hiding, this is not forced hiding, they decide to hide because they just don't want to deal with Hastinapur anymore. Bhimsen marries a Rakshasa girl. And the reason he marries a Rakshasa girl is this Rakshasa girl falls in love with him. Her name is Hidimba. Because Hidimba and her brother smelled the Pandavas while they were in the forest, and Hidimba's brother really wanted to eat them for prasad. So Hidimba was sent by her brother, who was also named Hidimba. It was Hidimba, Hidimba. And he sends Hidimba to get the Pandavas, but she falls in love with Bhimsen. Bhimsen kills Hidimba, the brother, and marries Hidimba, and has a kid named Ghatotkach. And Gato Kutch, the minute he's born, he actually grows into a full-grown person. He has a head like a pot. He has a shaved head, you know, nice, beautiful head like that. And so then the Pandavas leave. And there's many different stories that occur, such as in Eka Chakra, Bhimsen kills a demon named Bakasura. And they end up at the Swayamvara for Draupadi. Remember, Draupadi is the son of Drupada, and she is born from fire along with her brother, Tristadunya. So there's this Swayamvara. Swayamvara means the girl picks her own, but also there's a competition to see who's better. And in this particular competition, the person who would marry her would have to shoot an arrow through the eye of an artificial fish that was up in the air, but the person would have to be looking at a pool on the ground of water that was actually quivering and point down, look down as you were pointing up at the fish, the artificial fish swimming up in the air or in some pond up in the air like that. Impossible. So, basically, nobody could even pick up the bow except for Karna. And remember, Karna was actually known as the son of Ashudra in spite of actually having a better birth than that. And so Draupadi said, you know, I'm not going to marry this guy because he's from a bad family. And so eventually Arjuna picks this up and he shoots, poo, hits the fish in the eye, wins Draupadi, brings Draupadi, remember the Pandavas are in the forest at this time, brings Draupadi back to his mother. His mother, without looking at her, knowing what it is, because he says to his mother, I brought something really nice back. She says, share it equally, and therefore, because the son has to obey the mother. Thank God we don't have to do that nowadays. Therefore, she becomes the wife of the five Pandavas, common wife of the five Pandavas. But that was also because in a previous life, she asked for a husband five times from Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva said yes, because she wanted a husband so much. You got to be careful. If you want a husband, just ask once. But she asked, I want a husband, 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 I want a husband. She got five of them. So anyway, this is a plan to keep the Pandavas together, because if the Pandavas had all married different girls, you know, God knows there would have been fighting between the women. So that would have caused a problem. The Pandavas had to remain united. All right, very, very important. So then what happens is the Pandavas return at this particular point to Hastinapur. They decide, well, you know, obviously everybody knows we're still alive, so they we weren't burnt in the house. So they return to Hastinapur, and when they return to Hastinapur, they just can't get along with the Kurus or Dhritarashtra's son, so it's decided that they'll have a separate part of the kingdom called Indraprastha, which they develop very, very nicely. Kandavaprastha, Indraprastha. And there's a whole story about how they develop it. They till the land, they burn the Kandava forest, and they get blessed by Maya Dhanava, who constructs this amazing palace for them. But they have a deal between each other, which is just to keep peace, because they just have one wife. If one brother intrudes upon another brother while that brother is with the wife, then that person who intrudes will go to the forest for 12 years in exile. Oh my God. So one time Arjuna has to intrude because someone attacks to take away the cows, and he has to get his weapons, which are kept with Yudhishthira, who was with Draupadi at that time. So Arjuna has to go in exile for 12 years. And actually, he's supposed to be a brahmachari for 12 years. Didn't work out too well like that. So while he's in exile for 12 years, he marries Ulupi and Chitrangada. Anyway, there's a whole story about some more ladies he marries. It's not that he goes to Argentina and becomes the founding father of Argentina because Argentina is called Argentina. That's somebody made up that crazy story. And then, at the final portion of his exile, 12 years, he kidnaps Subhadra, who is Krishna and Balaram's sister, because Subhadra was supposed to marry Duryodhana, because Duryodhana had made friends with Balaram. Actually, he had accepted Balaram as his guru, and with the plan that he would have the Yadu dynasty, that's Krishna's dynasty, on his side by marrying into their dynasty. So, phew, all these intrigues. Krishna didn't like the idea, so he went against Balaram's desire and arranged for Arjuna to kidnap Subhadra. So they got married, and it was very nice, very, very nice thing. Anyway, so, phew. So all that is happening. Then, then go back to the Indraprast or Kanvaprast. Arjuna's back there. So they all decide to do this Rajasuya sacrifice to establish themselves as the emperors, or as Yudhisthira is the emperor. In order to do that, they have to kill people who are going to oppose them, like Jarasandha. There's this whole plan of killing Jarasandha. Bhimsen does that by wrestling with him and splitting him in pieces. And there's a lot more details of the story, but you know, we don't have a lot of time tonight to tell the story. So then the Pandavas establish themselves, or Yudhisthira, as the emperor. And they invite everyone for this Rajasuya sacrifice. And during this Rajasuya sacrifice, another demon gets killed, Shishupal, by Krishna, of course, by cutting off his head. That story is in the Krishna book in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and many other literatures. And Duryodhana, actually, at this particular sacrifice, he's invited to come, and his business is to take care of the donations. He gets really insulted. And he's insulted even more because this particular palace was constructed by this mystic demon that the Pandavas have. Water looked like land, and land looked like water, and doorways looked like there was no door there. And where there was a door, where there was a door, it looked like no door. And where there was no door, it looked like there was a door. Anyway, you get the idea. And so Duryodhana makes a fool of himself. Draupadi, everyone are laughing at him. He gets angrier and angrier and angrier. And with his uncle, Shakuni, who is the brother of Gandhari, they have a plan to take everything away from the Pandavas, which is the gambling match. They challenge the Pandavas to a gambling match in Indraprastha. The Pandavas come to the gambling match. And basically, Yudhisthira becomes enamored, thinking he's going to win. This is the problem with gambling. It's the greatest cheating thing, as Prabhupada says and Krishna says. Cheating games, he's gambling. So Yudhisthira loses everything, the kingdom, and then he gambles his brother and himself, and he gambles his wife. And after he gambles his wife, there's an attempt, that's Draupadi, of course, there's an attempt to disrobe her in the assembly place. And Draupadi tries to fight against Dushasan, who is the second brother of Duryodhana. And she's unable to do it because Dushasan's a strong guy. So she's fighting, holding on to her sari or onto her robe. And Krishna, he provides unlimited cloth. So this Dushasan, he's pulling. Finally falls on the ground exhausted because it's unlimited cloth being provided by Krishna. Amazing story. Whew. It's a lot of the story. I didn't realize I'd have to tell the whole story. Anyway, so so Krishna saves the scene. Dhritarashtra then sees, well, this is not going well for my sons, you know, because Draupadi is special and there's going to be curses. She starts cursing Bhimsen curses to break Duryodhana's thighs. So Dhritarashtra says, all right, you're free. And then, but Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra's son, says, let's have one more gambling match, all or nothing. If we win, then we take over the Pandavas' kingdom and they go into exile for 13 years, 12 years of regular exile, 1 year of agyatvas, which means they're hidden. And if we discover them during that hidden year, they have to go through a whole cycle of exile and hidden exile again. Okay, so they go into exile. Bhima is threatening, when we attack you, I'm going to break Duryodhana's thigh because Duryodhana threatened to put Draupadi on his thigh, which is actually quite illicit. And Bhima saying, vows to basically drink the blood of Dushyasana, and Draupadi vows never to comb her hair again, or put her hair up or wear a crown until she can take the blood from Dushyasana, who was the one who was actually dragging her, and put it on her hair. These are really strong people. So they go into exile for the 12 plus 1 year. And during that exile, there's many things that happen. Wow. Shikhandi is born at that time. And Shikhandi is not born to them. Shikhandi is born to Drupada. And Shikhandi is actually Amba, who vowed to be the cause of death of Bhishma previously. Shikhandi is born as a girl, but later transformed into a man because of a yaksha. I don't have time to tell that whole story. But during the Pandava's time of exile, because Shikhandi is an important person, during the Pandava's time of exile, the Pandavas get different weapons. For example, Arjuna gets celestial weapons from Lord Shiva, goes to the heavenly planets, learns how to dance, gets cursed by Urvashi, who was his great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, to become a eunuch because Urvashi wants to have a sexual relationship with him. And Arjuna just says, you know, hey, Mataji. And she says, you're going to become a eunuch. And Indra later on mitigates this particular curse to be just 1 year. He said, 1 year you can be a eunuch. That's going to help you during the 1 year of hiding. Remember, they had to go 1 year of hiding, 12 years exile, and the 13th year in hiding. Bhima meets Hanuman, his brother, and he gets blessed with Hanuman's power and ability. And also gets blessed that Hanuman will be on the flag of Arjuna. During the Battle of Kurukshetra, it's described that Hanuman, as the flag of Arjuna, would roar so loudly that so many thousands of soldiers would die just from hearing the roaring of the flag, which was Hanuman, which is non different than Hanuman. And so during that time also, Duryodhana, before the hidden exile, Duryodhana attempts to, embarrass the Pandavas. But in trying to do that, he gets captured by Gandharvas. The Pandavas actually free him. Arjuna frees him from the capture of the Gandharvas. And after that, Duryodhana decides to commit suicide, so he goes into a yogic trance. But during that yogic trance, his other demon friends give him a pep talk and say, don't worry, we're going to actually take over the consciousness of Bhishma, Grandfather Bhishma, of Dronacharya and Kripacharya. Kripacharya, we didn't get a chance to tell you who he was, but you can read the Mahabharata for that one. And the reason that their consciousness was taken over, or they were possessed, ghostly possession. Ghostly possession is there. I was just reading about Christianity the other day, how Jesus Christ sometimes would free people from ghosts or demons because if one eats impure food, and that's what was happening with Grandfather Bhishma, Dronacharya and others. They were eating impure food cooked in the kitchen of Duryodhana's kitchen. Yeah, not that Duryodhana was a cook. I'm sure he didn't know how to cook. So many things happened while the Pandavas were in exile. There was a test by Durvasa and his 10,000 disciples. I don't think we have time to talk about that right now. At the end of that exile, Jayadrath, who was married to Dushala, the one daughter of Gandhari, tries to kidnap Draupadi, but the Pandavas are actually able to capture him, and they give him five little sikas all over his head to remind them how powerful they are. So then, let's get back to the final year of the Pandavas' exile. And during the final year of the Pandavas' exile, they go to the kingdom of Bharat. And the Pandavas hide out in disguise as different occupations. For example, Yudhisthira becomes Kanka, who is actually like a Brahmin advisor to the king. We got Arjuna, who becomes a eunuch. That's why he had to get cursed to become impotent or become like a eunuch for a year. His name is Brihanala. And Draupadi becomes a hairdresser, and the Kulin Sahadev, they take care of the horses and the cows, Rishtanemi and Grantika. And so in this way, the Pandavas are all in, and Bhimsen becomes the cook, which he likes very much because he can eat. He has a wolf belly anyway. And so during that particular time, in hiding in the kingdom of Arat, they were hiding from the Kuru dynasty, there's a unfortunate encounter with the general in Arat, who is the brother of the king of Arat's wife. Okay, got that. And his name is Kichika. And this Kichika becomes interested in Draupadi. He's a very powerful guy. Nobody could kill him. And Bhimsen decides to kill Kichika in a very interesting way. He tells Draupadi to agree to meet with Kichika in this dark room. And he says to Draupadi, you be under the bed and I'll be on top of the bed with a sari on. So Kichika walks into the room, this big hulk of a man. He walks into the room and says, Draupadi, honey, are you here? And Draupadi under the bed says, yes, come and get me. And so then what happens is that he goes up to the bed and takes the sari off of Bhimsen. And Bhimsen gives him a punch in the kisser, and he kills him. So as soon as Bhimsen kills Kichika, it's understood by the Kurus who are trying to discover the Pandavas during their final year of exile, it's understood that the Pandavas are there. So they think, oh, we can discover them. Phew. We can discover them. So they head immediately. I mean, there's more stories about Draupadi there, but we don't have time to tell. So they go immediately to the kingdom of Arat to discover the Pandavas, and they have that whole plan. They have the Trigartas, which are another army and ally, approach the kingdom of Arat from one area, and they approach the kingdom of Arat from another area, and the Trigartas are defeated by four Pandavas because they leave Arjuna back because he's like Brihanala at that particular time, and by Virat's army. But then what happens is something extremely interesting is that the Kurus, that is Duryodhana and his brothers, and even Bhishma, begin to attack the kingdom of Virat, and there's no one left to defend the kingdom of Virat because the other army, the Trigartas, have actually drawn away the four Pandavas. And so there's not only women left in the kingdom of Virat, and Brihanala, who is basically a eunuch, Arjuna, in the eunuch form. Whew. Oh my God, a lot of details. So all right, so Brihanala, that is Arjuna, says to the queen, Sudeshna, I think the Sudeshna is the name of the queen, if I remember correctly. He says to Sudeshna that your son, your really young son, he can defeat the Kurus, and I'll just be the chariot driver. So he drives the chariot, and this young boy, feeling his oats, you know, thinking he's more powerful than the Kurus, is in the chariot. And then as soon as this young boy sees all the Kurus that are trying to find the Pandavas and trying to defeat the kingdom of Virat, this boy jumps off the chariot, runs away, and there's Arjuna dressed like a woman with long flowing hair, beautiful. He's not recognized by the Kurus. He grabs the son of, in the kingdom of Arat, his name is Uttara. Yeah, Uttara. You know, Uttara is the girl. So he grabs him, and he brings him back to the chariot, and then they go into the woods, and Arjuna takes all of his weapons, because the year is over right now, the year of hiding. And Arjuna gets his Gandibabo, but he still, you know, has his hairdress on, looks like a lady. And he goes back and he defeats the whole Kuru dynasty single-handedly. And, of course, they recognize him after the sun has gone down. Wow. A lot of things that happen. So then, the Pandavas say, you know, we want to regain our kingdom. And so they basically, Vidura advises Dhritarashtra to actually give back the Pandavas, Indraprastha, they're part of the kingdom. Vidura is insulted by Duryodhana, the son of Dhritarashtra, and Vidura just goes on pilgrimage. And then they send Sanjaya to the Pandavas to try to make peace, and the Pandavas say, just, you know, give us back our kingdom. Then Krishna comes to the Kurus to try to make peace, and the Kurus say, we're not even going to give the Pandavas 5 pieces of land that could fit on the head of a pin, what to speak of 5 villages. Because Krishna is so merciful, he says, you know, I don't want to get blamed for this whole thing, so just give the Pandavas 5 villages. Wow. Oh my God. So, this gets really complex at this particular point. So then, Duryodhana tries to capture Krishna, thinking that if he can capture Krishna, he's won the battle, because the Pandavas without Krishna are not going to be able to do anything. And so Duryodhana is not able to capture Krishna, because Krishna actually manifests himself as the universal form and frightens the bejesus out of Duryodhana and everyone else. And so then Krishna goes back and says, you know, this is going to be a fight. And so the battle line is drawn between all the different parties. Krishna, he, on the way out, after trying to make peace with the Kurus, Krishna tries to convince Karna, who is at this particular point joined with the Kurus, because the Kurus have actually given him a kingdom, so he's no longer considered just a Shudra. So he tries to convince Karna, who's the most expert archer, just equal to Arjuna, to join with his brothers. He reveals to Karna who he is, and Karna says, no, I have this obligation to Duryodhana. And then even Kunti tries against Karna, saying, you know, you're my son. And Karna says, no, you never took care of me before, but I'll give you this benediction that 5 of your sons will remain alive. In other words, there's 6 sons of Kunti. There's the 5 Pandavas, and Karna was actually the son of Kunti. 5 will remain alive. In other words, he wants to kill Arjuna. His whole life he's wanted to kill Arjuna, because Arjuna insulted him during an earlier time when there was some competition, and Arjuna wouldn't let him compete because he was considered to be a Shudra. Wow. Very complicated here. So, then there's war. And so, anyway, before the war, other things happen. Like Abhimanyu marries Uttara, the daughter of the king of Bharat, and later on Uttara is going to give birth to Parikshit. Anyway, there's a whole story there, but that's after the Battle of Kurukshetra. So then there's the war, the planning for the war, and right before the Bhagavad Gita is spoken, actually we covered a lot of this, right before the Bhagavad Gita is spoken, Dhritarashtra is given divine vision, not given by divine vision, he's offered divine vision by Vyasadeva, his spiritual master, and also his father. And Dhritarashtra says, no, I don't want to see for the first time in my life to see my sons being killed, so you can give this divine vision to Sanjaya. And Sanjaya is like the chariot driver and secretary of Dhritarashtra, and Sanjaya is able to see with this divine vision, even though he's in the palace in Hastinapur, he's able to see everything going on in the Battle of Kurukshetra, and the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita is Sanjaya relating what's happening in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, especially the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, which is the Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it? Dharma Kshetra Kurukshetra Samaveta Yudhsabha Mamaka Pandavaschava Kimakurvata Sanjaya So the first question raised by Dhritarashtra, that my sons and the sons of Pandu were gathering in this holy place known as Kurukshetra, and what are they going to do, O Sanjaya? So Sanjaya is able to see this whole battle. So the Bhagavad Gita is the recitation of Sanjaya to Dhritarashtra, repeating the words of Krishna and Arjuna, and also giving his own opinion at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, that wherever there's Krishna and Arjuna, there's always morality and victory. So that's the preamble to the Bhagavad Gita. Phew! There's a lot more information. Actually, if we had time, I have a whole slideshow with all these details that we could do that tomorrow. But I don't... It would take another hour or two to show you that slideshow. Yeah, but so maybe we'll do that tomorrow because it's really interesting. It'll help jog your memory as to what some of the details are. And this slideshow shows what's happened in each part of the Mahabharata, each parva of the Mahabharata. Mahabharata is the world's largest epic poem. It's four times larger than the Ramayana. Well, it's an epic, I'm sorry. It's not a poem. It's like the Ramayana. The Ramayana is the largest epic poem, but the Mahabharata is the largest epic work. And it is like four times larger than the Ramayana. Ramayana is something like three or four times larger than the Bible. So you're talking about, humongous work, this Mahabharata, with all this information and all these side stories there. And in addition, all the philosophy that's there too. And if one isn't really understanding the Siddhanta, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, one can get very confused with the Mahabharata and think that at a particular time, Krishna's not acting so dharmically, or not understanding who Krishna is, or not understanding the Pandavas are, or even thinking that Duryodhana is the good guy. So you can really get confused unless you're actually guided by disciplic succession. So, on that happy note, oh my God, let's see if anyone wants to ask questions. Hold on a second. Let me let you ask questions. 1 second. Participants. Mute. Allow the participants. You just give you 2 or 3 minutes to ask questions since we're running a little late. All right. I think you're allowed to ask questions now. Anybody have any questions? Questions? No one has any questions. It's actually probably so bewildering everything I said. Make sure this... No one? Okay. All right, you have some questions. What's your questions?
Like in Mahabharata, we see that so many extramarital affair or so many affairs were happening. One was with this one was with another one. So where does the morality sit among all of
them? Where's the extramarital affair? You pointed out they got married and they had children.
Vasudev was with Ambika and Ambalika, so he never got married. I don't think so.
That was an extramarital. Now, let me explain something. In the previous age, if one's brother, it's not allowed now, if one's brother could not have children, then the brother could have a child with the brother's wives. That was part of Dharma. It's not an extramarital affair. Now it's not allowed. In Kali Yuga, it's prohibited, along with other things like Ashwamedha, Gomedha, and all those other nice things. Not so nice things. But it's not extramarital. And when Arjuna went, and he had children by different people, different ladies, then he got married to them. At least the Gandharva marriage. Kshatriyas could have many marriages, but they wouldn't have... I don't see extramarital affairs. I mean, of course, you can consider like Parashara Muni and Satyavati. That's the only one I can think of. but that was, it's like almost like an immaculate, it was like an immaculate conception. And then it's something like the demigods who had children by, with Kunti. It's not exactly extramarital affairs. People got married.
When the demigods came to the earth and had a child with Kunti, the child was born instantly, isn't it?
Yes. No baby stuff. Oh, no, they were babies. I'm sorry. In the heavenly planets, there's no babies allowed. No diapers. But these were babies, yes. But this is not exactly extramarital. It's, I mean.
So when the Kunti had a child, like, did she, like they gave her the child straight away or they consummated it?
No, they gave, Kunti's children were given to her right away. You talk about the Pandavas.
Okay. Then if you go further, when the after the Mahabharata and Yudhishthira were doing like what you're doing with the Pitraloka or something, and Kunti said, do one for Karna. And he said, he was our enemy. Why should we do it? And I heard that Yudhishthira gave Kunti, like told her mom, no woman would be able to hide her belly or hide something. Or like, is it true? I don't know. I'm just...
Yeah. Oh, here's the thing. Yeah, that's a curse in the Mahabharata. What happened is when Karna was killed, Kunti revealed to the Pandavas that he was your brother. And Yudhishthira was so angry with Kunti at that point, he actually, I mean, this is, of course, it's in the Mahabharata, it's not coming from me, don't blame me, don't blame the messenger. So, let me just change some of the things on here. Wait a second, just looking at my computer is a little bit. It's a little glitches here. Hold on a second. Excuse me. Let's see, where are we? Whoops. Yeah. Was it? Sometimes the things get glitches. Okay. Here we go. So what happens, Kunti revealed he was your brother. This. It keeps blinking off and on. Anyway, can you still see me all right? Because I'm just concerned about this computer.
Yeah, we can see you fine.
Okay. Yeah, because there's things happening. Because I was doing so many things today. The problem with an IBM computer, PC, is that sometimes you got to shut it down between when you engage in some heavy stuff on the computer. And I didn't shut it down before you do anything else. So anyway, as soon as Kunti revealed that this is your brother, Yudhishthira got so angry with her, he said, I curse all women never to keep a secret. That's probably what you're referring to, right?
Oh, yes, okay.
But on the other hand, there's 80-something editions of the Mahabharata, and each one is slightly different, so I wouldn't say that that's a curse. Anyway, I don't know if that's there in the original Mahabharata, because there's many different Mahabharatas. Part of the story I told was the stuff that's in all the Mahabharatas that I know of. So, but there are other parts that are a little bit different than some of the, let's say, South Indian Mahabharata. In the South Indian Mahabharata, you have Vyasadeva and Satyavati actually having a regular marriage, rather than just Vyasadeva and Satyavati giving birth to Vyasadeva. Parashar Muni and Satyavati having a regular marriage, and then Vyasadeva being born, getting all these messages, and Vyasadeva being born as a result of that. So, anyway, so the story I told was the main story.
Thank you, Guru.
Okay, one more question, just because it's getting late.
Gurudev, I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, not about the question I said in the chat, but I'm kind of wondering, like, I know it was a different, I know it was a different age, but, like, what really constituted a marriage at that time? Like, some, like, Satya saw, like, a woman that was beautiful and then was like, okay, let's have a Brahmin say some things and call us married and I can have as many wives as I want. It's kind of like a loophole, it seems like.
What constitutes a marriage at that time is the same thing that constitutes a marriage nowadays. The essence of a marriage is the promise that people make that they stick to. Mm-hmm. So in those days, someone could make a promise like just by exchanging garlands, and that was called a Gandharva marriage. So there were different, I would say there's different ceremonies, some of which took a week or two, others took like a few minutes, but the essence of the marriage was always a promise and the person would stick to it. Like, it's not that Arjuna neglected any of his wives. And in those days, they had polygamy. I am not an advocate of polygamy, believe me.
I mean, it's interesting because, like, well, like, Bhima left his wife, right? I mean, they had the promise of, like, the having one son, then he would leave.
Yeah. But, actually, it's nice you know the Mahabharata. Well, his son was grown up, and he took care of Bhima's wife.
Oh, that was like why? Okay.
Yeah, the son was that when Ghatotkacha was born. A few minutes after he was born, he actually grew up full grown.
Yeah.
And that was decided by mutual consultation.
It's just interesting. It feels like these people like aren't really, I know it's the class too, but it's like they're not really like free of like lust. They want to marry women just because they're beautiful, and then they have like five wives.
As far as Shantanu, yes, you're right. Shantanu had this issue. That's true.
Well, I was thinking also, like, even of the Pandavas, not to, like,
which
criticize,
ones?
But, like, when they were, well, just, like, when they were, like, they see Draupadi, they just know they want to marry her, just because they see her, and she's beautiful. And that's how it is, because, like, that's how all of the princes at the Swayamvara or whatever, they all just see her, and they just
well, the interesting thing about Kshatriyas is that they definitely had this issue with how do you say it? Nice way? I don't want to use the word, the L word. They definitely had this issue. That's the nature of people in the mode of passion.
Right. That's why I was saying, like, the class. And what, I guess it's just the class.
It's the class. You know, the nature of the people in the mode of passion. They're lusty. I mean, what can I say? But with the Pandavas, because they were great devotees, it was like a pastime.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to say that the Pandavas were lusty. It's just that they were meant to be married to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was Krishna's plan. So Krishna, for those devotees, it's like Yogamaya, the internal potency, how Krishna sort of like implanted that desire. For other people, it would have been plain old lust.
Mm-hmm. And other people in the Mahabharata too, like.
Oh, yeah. Like Karna and Duryodhana and the rest of them, they were all just like filled with lust.
Mm-hmm.
It's described when Krishna went to kidnap Rukmini, the other Kshatriyas, as soon as they saw Rukmini, they actually fell off their horses.
Yeah. I was just wondering why, if it was like a whole pastime, why this was happening, but I guess it is like a pastime.
Yeah, it's a pastime.
Wondering if this same pastime happens like Krishna's other pastimes, like constantly, and is it
in different ways? In different ways, there's always variety in these pastimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Imagine how good a woman would feel thinking that when all these men saw me, they fell off their horses. It'd be real good for a lady's ego, wouldn't it?
I mean, it'd just be like, wait till you know me. You won't
feel those things. That's so funny.
But I guess so.
Like, yeah, like in the case of Shantanu, when he fell in love, he fell in love with Ganga Devi. You know, it was probably, he should have waited until he got to know that she was going to kill all of his kids.
I know.
Anyway, these are pastimes, and they're interesting, but we should not imitate nowadays.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, it's past my bedtime. Not really, but it's time to end. We'll see everybody. Maybe tomorrow we'll actually go through a more thorough study of the Mahabharata, which will be interesting. Not the same stories, but we'll actually go through the different parts of the Mahabharata. I have a whole presentation about that, a slideshow actually, where we could show what happens in different parts of the Mahabharata. Now that we know the stories, we can actually corroborate them and connect them with different parts of the Mahabharata. Okay. Thank you all for joining us. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki.